Good evening. This is Life Rattle, your story show, and I'm your host, Virginia Ashbery. Tonight, Life Rattle number 1205 features three stories from a new Life Rattle writer, Sonia Dhaliwal. Sonia Dhaliwal was born in Mississauga in 1990. She spent her toddler years in Ada, Ohio, where her father attended pharmacy school. Next, her father's residency took the family to Sioux Lookout, a small town in northern Ontario. The family, now larger with the arrival of twin siblings, eventually returned to Mississauga, where Sonia's father opened up a pharmacy. Sonia attended elementary, middle, and high school in Mississauga until Ohio beckoned again. She spent 2 years and one academic quarter battling an intense pre-medical program in Ada before declaring herself confused. After soul searching in India with her mom, backpacking around Europe with her best friends, and attempting and failing the MCAT, Sonia decided to give university another try, this time in biology and professional writing at UTM. Between classes and studying, Sonia loves to practice yoga, cuddle with her dog Tyson, and of course, writing her heart out. The stories you will hear tonight speak of refreshing, unabashed, youthful choices. Dhaliwal's accomplished delivery and brutal self-honesty will make these tales resonate for any of us who will admit to having been young themselves. And you're listening to Life Rattle from Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And please be advised, Life Rattle stories often contain language and situations that some listeners may find offensive, so listener discretion is advised. So let's listen now as Sonia Dhaliwal reads her first story tonight titled, The Sales Objective.
The Sales Objective by Sonia Dhaliwal. My shift at Feel-A-Day starts in 5 minutes. I linger in the back room, sauntering through the saleswoman's preparatory ritual. I cross items off the mental checklist my manager, Katz, had suggested. Nude lipstick, check. Simple silver chain necklace, check. Gum, I rummage in my purse for my package of Excel and pop a piece into my mouth. Check. I turn to the mirror to complete the checklist. I watch as the reflection fidgets with her black, immaculately styled hair. She reaches down and rubs a spot of dirt off her patent black heels. She pulls nervously at the hem of her new black pencil skirt. My reflection is a stranger I haven't quite become acquainted with yet. I leave the staff room 2 minutes early. Katz will want to run through the sales objective figures with Jill, another salesgirl, and me. I haven't seen Jill yet and wonder if she's already on the floor. My heels click against the chic hardwood flooring as I steer through racks of fluffy fur vests and casual cashmere sweaters. As I scan the floor for Katz, I notice Eva behind the cash register. Her long blonde hair ripples over a silk scarf she wrapped elaborately around her neck. Hey, I greet Eva, winding my way around the front desk. Eva smiles dully as she scans a pair of jeans. Girl, I have been here since 6 a.m., Eva mutters. Of course, they would choose the coldest day in December to restock the back room. I pout my lips sympathetically, but don't say anything. I'm not about to complain that part-time associates don't receive stockroom training. All right, Sonia, out onto the floor, a voice purrs behind me. Katz taps her foot against the hardwood. Her black stiletto boots reflect the fluorescent lighting. Katz has belted a black, loose-fitting sweater over a pair of black tights. Her feline features are accentuated by sweeping black eyeliner framing her eyelashes. I feel blood rush to my ears as I follow cats out onto the floor. Sales objectives meetings are always held arbitrarily among the tables of folded camisoles and racks of assorted slacks. Cats pauses in front of a wall of shelves and hangers. Her lips curl into a slight smirk as she taps her foot, so I start reorganizing the hanging garments by size. I order the business casual dresses from XS to S to M, wishing Katz would just start the meeting. Katz leers at incoming customers as she prowls back and forth between the clothes racks. She runs the back of her hand over the sides of her head, smoothing down a few stray hairs that deviate from her slick ponytail. "Today's sales objective?" Katz asks. 8,500, I recite, recalling the numbers that had been scribbled onto the whiteboard in the staff room. "And this week's sales objective?" she continues. Katz raises her eyebrows, testing my ability to memorize random numbers. 55,600, I regurgitate. Katz directs her gaze at my patent heels and slowly traces a path up my outfit. I turn to refold the pile of sweaters on the shelf, pretending not to notice her scanning me. I shift from one throbbing foot to the other. I realize that I was subject to Katz's attack on my own. I hope for Jill's sake that she slipped on the glassy ice in the parking lot and twisted her ankle. She is 10 minutes late and will need a legitimate excuse. "You're in Zone 1 today, so make sure the change rooms stay clean and organized," Katz says, smiling to reveal her pointy teeth. "And don't forget, Christmas is only 9 days away, so let's make sure to emphasize jewelry and purses as additions to gift purchases." I have received the same instructions every day since starting at Fila Day 2 weeks ago. "Sounds great," I respond, forcing the tired muscles around my mouth to produce a smile. "Oh, and Sonia?" Katz hisses. "Yes?" "Pull up your stockings. They're sagging." I nod my head pathetically. That night, after my shift, I kick my heels off in the foyer of my house, yank the constricting stockings off my waist, and throw them into the hamper in the laundry room. I sink into the living room couch, tucking my bare feet under me. I wiggle my toes, liberating them from the rigid position they've been stuck in all night. I lean back into the cushions, my eyelids fluttering shut. The faint, familiar clicking of nails against tiles resonates throughout the neighboring kitchen. The clicking trails through the kitchen, and as it gets closer, a soft panting becomes audible as well. The room smells of wet fur. I rock slightly against the cushions as Doogie, my Labrador, leaps onto the couch. He settles his heavy head into my lap. I run my fingers through his thick, white fur. Thousands of slender white hairs scatter across my black clothes. An ease lifts from my shoulders.
That was The Sales Objective, written and read by Sonia Dhaliwal. The second story tonight is titled Double Booking.
Double Booking by Sonia Dhaliwal. Snowflakes cascade softly from invisible clouds. They collect on the train tracks that divide the village of Ada into two nearly perfect halves. The shine of the snow seeps in through the window, illuminating the bedroom. I fidget in bed. The room is too bright, and I can't open my eyes yet. I am suddenly aware of something harrowing lurking in my head. I need to get it out. I nuzzle my forehead into the pillow, but the creature is lodged into the crevices of my skull. I try to massage my temples, but my hand is stuck under something heavy. I reluctantly open my eyes, trailing my gaze down my tricep, past my forearm to my wrist. My hand disappears under ratchet. I sit up in bed and the room spins into upheaval. Ratchet doesn't move. I whack him with a pillow, but he still doesn't budge. I whip my eyes around the room, hoping no one has seen me here. The sudden movement hurls me into an overwhelming bout of nausea. I need to get to the bathroom, but more importantly, I need to get out of Ratchet's bed. I hope we didn't do it. I roll onto the IKEA carpet that lines the floor. I crawl into the bathroom and pull the door closed behind me. After vomiting the contents of my stomach into the toilet bowl, I force myself to get up off the bathroom tiles and look in the mirror. I venture my hand across my scalp and wish I hadn't. My hair feels like it mopped the floor last night. Mascara and glitter are smeared under my bloodshot eyes. My t-shirt screams sugar in glossy, icicle-esque letters. JC bought a matching one that says spice in cinnamon-colored swirls. A look of panic crosses my reflection. Where the fuck is JC? I forget about the abominable brute that is hacking in my brain. I exit the bathroom and scan Ratchet's living room. Plastic shot glasses lay strewn about the beer-soaked carpet. The smell of the gooey red and green jello residue inside the shot glasses makes me gag. A fifth-year pharmacy student lies passed out on the couch. Some freshman girls sprawl on a beanbag. A frat boy snuggles up with Ratchet's dog under the kitchen table. But no JC. I fish for my cell phone in my bra. I type, "Hey girl, are you alive?" into a new message. I send the message to JC. I grab my TNA parka from Ratchet's closet, step into my Costco boots, tiptoe past the living room, and hurry out the front door. The crisp December air splashes over me. I pull my fur-lined hood over my head and turn right onto Gilbert Street. I step carefully over the gravel and snow mounds that line the train tracks. Maybe JC left to go to another party, I contemplate. But it's 9 a.m. on a Sunday. How am I supposed to track her down? I pass the track and field house, the football house, and the Phi Delta Chi house. They all had parties last night. JC could be anywhere. My phone vibrates in my pocket. I pull it out, hoping it's a message from JC. "Hey girl," the text reads, "are you and JC still coming to the Kappa Phi Singathon at 10 a.m.? It's Rowena, the Student Senate Vice President." The truth is that JC and I aren't alcoholics. We're actually active members of the Ohio Northern University community. JC and I both serve on Student Senate, just one organization of the plethora of extracurricular activities we participate in. I hold the position of Secretary for Academic Affairs, while JC is in her third term running as Secretary of Finance. This past Tuesday at the cabinet meeting, JC and I had signed up for Kappa Phi's 24-hour-long singathon. The sorority hosts the event to raise money for the local food pantry. They ask for other campus organizations to volunteer for time slots. This is so like JC and me, I think, shaking my head, double booking a hangover and a charity event. My fingers freeze as I text Rowena back. "Yep, we'll be there. See you at 10. I continue my trek down Gilbert Street. 10 minutes later, I pound on JC's door. "JC girl, I know you're in there," I whisper shout. I don't want to wake up the resident assistant, who lives across the hall from JC. The RA's duties mostly consist of kicking boys out of girls' rooms past visiting hours and lecturing residents for vandalizing the bathroom, but they also hand out the occasional ticket for noise complaints. I kick the door obnoxiously a couple times and stop to listen. I hear a muffled moan as JC rolls over in her top bunk, the bedside ladder creaking under JC's weight, and then a crash. "Be careful," I scream at her, Screw the RA. The door swings open. My mess of a best friend stands in the doorway. Tracy's silky brown hair looks just as gooey and disheveled as mine feels. She squints at the hallway light that shines into her cave-like room. A few straggling clumps of mascara crumble from her eyelashes as she rubs her eyelids. I sigh as I enter her dorm room. I shove a pile of textbooks and loose-leaf papers off her roommate's futon and plop down on the cushions. So remember that Singa whatever we signed up for? Yeah, that's this morning, I inform JC. JC kicks the door closed with her heel and sinks to the Berber carpet. She curls into fetal position. A few mumbles meander from her chapped lips. JC, I think we have to go. Are you going to make it? I ask her, crawling over to pat her back. I need toast, she murmurs. I force JC to brush her teeth, pull on a sweater, and zip up her winter coat. We hike across campus to McIntosh, the student center. JC and I sit shivering across from one another in the freezing cafeteria. We nibble on our toast and sip our warm ginger ale. We try to figure out how we got separated last night, but too much talking is making JC gag. The singathon is in the student activities room next door. Our slot starts in 3 minutes. We should probably get going, I sigh. JC nods in agreement and gingerly lifts herself off the bench. We take our trays over to the conveyor belt. Dirty dishwater has leaked onto the revolving counter. It smells of curdled yogurt and rotting potato peels. I turn away in disgust, but the odor is too much for JC. She slaps her hand over her mouth and dashes out of the cafeteria towards the ladies' room. I speedwalk behind her, trying not to cause a scene. Hey girl, hey, a voice squeals behind me. I cradle my throbbing forehead in my palm as I turn slowly. Where did JC run off to? We're up next, Rowena cries, enveloping me in a hug. I think she needs to pee. I think I need to as well, I insist, but Rowena holds onto my elbow. We're up, like right now. JC will meet us over in the activities room, Rowena beams at me, handing me a program. As Rowena drags me over to the merriment of the assembled chorus and audience, I hope that JC has a hair tie. The student activities room is blinking with strings of Christmas lights. The room is packed with people. I push my way through the crowd. My skin feels feverish. Members of the student senate stand packed close together on the chorus bleachers. I steady myself on a rickety bleacher. The secretary of housing chats animatedly at my right. He is far too cheerful. The Kappa Phi president introduces us to the crowd. We begin with Joy to the World. JC misses it. I worry if she's okay as we continue with Jingle Bell Rock. But then halfway through the song, JC slips into the activities room silently. She inches her way around the perimeter of the room to where I stand in the bleachers. She extends a delicate, manicured hand up to me and flashes a wicked grin. What a bright time, it's the right time, to rock the night away, I belt out, as I hoist my best friend up beside me.
That was Double Booking, written and read by Sonia Dhaliwal. Now let's hear our last story now from Dhaliwal, and it's titled Conscience.
Conscience by Sonia Dhaliwal. I stand at the Timmy's counter, waiting for my large triple-triple coffee. I ponder adding a vanilla-dipped donut to my purchase when my phone vibrates in my pocket. I scramble to dig 40 more cents out of my purse, dropping it into the cashier's open palm as I pull my BlackBerry out of my pocket. The inbox icon on my screen shows I have one new text. I open my inbox. The name Dracos emanates on the screen next to the unread message icon. What's up? The text reads. I loosen the scarf around my throat and unzip my coat. I fan my hot cheeks with some napkins while I wait for my coffee. I wish I ordered an ice cap. I dart my eyes around the Timmys for someone to help me out of this predicament. The granny standing to my left taps my shoulder before I realize the Timmys employee has been holding my triple-triple and calling, "Miss, here's your coffee," for over a minute. I don't mean to snatch my coffee, but I do. I run out of Timmy's and across the parking lot, rummaging for my keys in my purse. How long has it been? 3 months? No, 4. I calculate how long Dracos and I have been ignoring each other as I press the unlock button on my keys. I tumble into the driver's seat, slamming the door to shut out the cold. I sit in the Timmy's parking lot for 27 minutes, arguing with myself. Dignity sits on the dashboard. She flattens the collar of her crisp, clean blouse. Dignity's flat-ironed hair falls over her shoulders. She clicks her Oxfords together and shakes her head. "Don't respond," she says. "He can never commit. You know it. Dracos knows it." Debauchery sprawls in the back seat. Clad only in lingerie, sweat trickles down through her breasts, past her belly button, over the curves of her thighs. Debauchery arches her back deliciously. Her tousled tresses cling to the seat from static attraction. "Who wants a commitment?" she asks. "Not you. What you want is an orgasm. When was the last time you had one of those?" I punish myself for what I know I'm about to do. I keep the heat off, shivering in the December chill. I text Dracos back. "Hey, not much, just working. How long are you home for Christmas?" Dignity shakes her head. "Who's going to wake up feeling like a skank tomorrow? You." "Who's going to wake up feeling satisfied tomorrow? You," shouts Debauchery from the back seat. I shove the key into the ignition. I lift the paper coffee cup out of the holder. I cinch my fingers around the cup as I bring it to my lips, but it still trembles in my anxious hands. The coffee is bitter. All the sugar has sunk to the bottom of the cup. I place the cup back in the holder. I reverse out of the parking lot and head north on Hurontario, Ontario. My phone vibrates. I stop at a red light at the Hurontario and Bristol intersection. Dracos responds, "Just till January 3rd. What you up to right now?" Dignity steadies herself as she stands on the dashboard, as if balancing herself on a surfboard. She jumps up and down, waving her hands wildly. "You're cleaning your room," she cries. "You're on a date with a med student. You're masturbating." Debauchery cackles as she crawls over to the front of the car and straddles the gear stick. "You don't even know how to masturbate," she laughs. "You know it. Dracos knows it." I type, "No plans, really," and click send before steering left onto Bristol. "You miss the lifestyle," Dignity insists. She pushes her glasses up higher on her nose. She flattens her peasant skirt, pulling at the modest hemline. "You miss the comfort. You miss the escape. You don't miss him." "Who gives a fuck?" Debauchery interjects. She pulls her breasts up in her bra and taps them lovingly. She flashes me a wicked smile. "Ain't nothing wrong with a little lovin' to ease the stressin'." My phone vibrates. I swerve right onto McClellan, startling a creaky old man crossing the street. I open the message, ignoring the road. "Wanna come over?" Dracos asks. I exhale, breathing a visible, white, frosty cloud into the windshield. I drive through a red light, turn left onto Avonwick, then left again onto Dracos' driveway. I don't bother responding. My hip bone slides against Dracos' as we lay in bed. The setting winter sun brushes the cerulean room with a blush of pink light, basking Dracos and I in purple mist. The hemlock furniture glows in the fading sunlight. Rounded glass bottles of cologne are arranged in a line on Dracos' dresser. A framed picture of us in high school lays flat on the dresser. It used to lean against the wall, but at least it's not face down. It shows Dracos' lips curving slightly, his long tresses framing his cheekbones. My nose is squished against his face as I kiss his cheek roughly. Boxers, socks, and undershirts hang out of open drawers. Jeans stitched with elaborate patterns and t-shirts printed with angels and skulls collect at the foot of the bookcase. Dirty dishes stack on the desk, and the sheets covering the bed have come undone, tangled and twisted with perspiration. Dracos and I lay silently amongst the gray sheets. The cotton is worn from years of passing through the dryer. I sigh as I rub my cheek against the soft, threadbare fabric. I shimmy even closer to Dracos. His long, dispersed breaths feel hot against my neck. The aromas of freshly baked bread and honeysuckle candle wax drift into the room. They are stifled as Dracos brings a twisted glass sculpture to his lips and pulls deeply. He holds the smoke in his chest as he leans over the bed, reaching for the window. Dracos pulls the window open. It creaks as bits of white paint chip off. A frosty breeze flows in, basking my vulnerable skin in goosebumps. Dracos releases the toque into the early winter evening. The smoke passes through the mesh netting in effortless swirls, drifting past an elderly willow tree in the backyard. The naked willow poses in raven silhouette against the watercolored sky. Its branches are speckled with patches of fresh snow. Its branches cast jagged shadows across my bare midriff and Dracos' exposed thighs. Dracos props himself up against the headboard and reaches for his cell phone. I pull a sweater over my torso and slip into a pair of boxers. I prop my elbows on the chipped white paint of the windowsill and place my feet over the warm draft drifting from the air vent in the floor. The warm sensation offsets the tingling of the cold window against my forearms. I cradle my chin in the palms of my hands. Dracos types rapidly on his cell. He smirks at something on the screen. "Do you have plans for tonight?" I ask casually. "Yeah," Draco says, his eyes on the BlackBerry. He doesn't even hesitate. Dignity sits on the windowpane. I look at her as she crosses her left thigh over her right and folds her hands delicately over her knees. She stares up at me over the rim of her glasses. I pry my eyes away from her gaze as my chest clogs with shame. I look around the room for debauchery, hoping for a little reassurance, but I can't find her. She's not here.
That was Conscience, written and read by Sonia Dhaliwal. And that concludes Life Rattle number 1205. I recorded Sonia Dhaliwal reading her stories. My name is Virginia Ashbery. Life Rattle returns next Sunday night with more stories. And Life Rattle is produced from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman.